Welcome to In the Hunt Podcast. We will bring clarity to the complex game of golf. Start your path to better play today. This is Brian Bailey from Charlottesville, Virginia, and I'm joined with Mark Sweeney from Windermere, Florida. And we welcome you to the hunt. Welcome to this episode of In the Hunt. We're going to change gears and have a little fun. The one thing I hope you've learned from this group is we like to rip on each other and have a good time. And I think today's episode will be, it could possibly be epic for this. Before I get into what we're actually going to do, let's dive in here and welcome Mark Sweeney in. Mark, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. Getting tons of R&D work done this week, which I'm super psyched about. Some good Skunkworks projects going on that we will release at some point.
Awesome. Awesome. Way to leave them hanging out there.
Exactly. Gareth, that's all you're going to get.
That's right. Gareth, how are you doing today?
Hey, Brian, how's it going? Another beautiful day in Ireland. I'm doing well, pal. I'm reading a lot. I'm writing a lot. I'm researching a lot. And I'm dealing with things as best can. So long, you know, let's just do that for the time being.
Awesome. Awesome. Jamie, how are you? I couldn't get the monkey in this week. Maybe next week. How are you doing?
I'm hanging on. Yeah, no, I'm good. I've been doing, you know, quite a few webinars, podcasts, and just about to start my 5-week countdown back to coaching again. And I've booked in some clients for June. So I'm starting to look at June the 1st as a return to the lesson tee. And if I have to bring them forward or push them back, I'll do that. But it feels good to have, even if it's temporary, a start date.
No, that's what a lot of the players are the same way, because the tours are all giving start dates. So they all see kind of that there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I'm actually training, getting ready for what's coming up. So I agree. Yeah. It's good to have some goals and some timelines that kind of strive towards. So today we're going to have a little fun. I'm going to host this episode. So what we're going to call this episode is What Would You Do? I have 6 scenarios written down. I will call on a coach to call a number out. I will read them that scenario, and then they'll have to explain or give great insight on that scenario on what they would do. And then I'm going to award them some points up to 1,000 points. And then I'm going to open it up to the other 2 competitors, that they can weigh in. And if they make really good points, they can earn bonus points to their total. And the player who wins at the end has the most points, gets to host this next time. So
terrifying.
The beauty of it is the points are completely at my discretion. So I can say that's great or that's not, or you had some points and I took them all, whatever I want to do. I've been watching a lot of Whose Line Is It Anyways. That's my go-to, actually just like watching nonstop on television right now. So the points really don't matter, just like Whose Line Is It Anyways. So let's have a little fun here. And I did create this wonderful, wonderful scoreboard. Now for the players listening on the radio, just listening to the podcast, it's not very riveting, but we are releasing these as videos coming shortly, so we'll add some flair to that. So we're going to dive in here. First and foremost, Jamie Donaldson, let's start with you because, you know, there's not a player to start with.
Just for the record, I've got no idea what's going on.
6.
4.
Oh, nice. All right, here's your scenario. You have a player that comes to you. Yeah. He says, I see the better players in my club have access to all different types of technologies. I'm wondering how I can incorporate technology into my training to become a better golfer. What say you?
Wow. Well, I'd say, first of all, if you want to use technology, you have to have access to technology. So what? The first thing is what can that player get their hands on? But listen, that's a loaded gun, that question, because it all depends where they're at with that. I can see you laughing now. It all depends what's going on with their game. I mean, it's a bit of a chicken and egg scenario. I think I'm a putting coach, so it'd have to be, you know, my chosen technology is TrackMan. I like TrackMan because we can measure start line. We can also work out face angles. But more importantly, when it comes to players' manipulations, sort of the linear or the non-linear players, I can start to look deeper into what might be causing them to start the ball on an unintended line. For an example, if you've got someone who's non-linear, they're always going to try and match the curve. When you put T-pegs in around the hole, these are the players that always start the ball higher than they should. So if you've got a non-linear player, using T-pegs for drills can be quite detrimental to their performance. So in that respect, we could use it to find out what their preferences are. But, you know, technology doesn't alone get the job done. However, it could be good to use to say, look, you know, everything's in good shape. We are starting it online. We've got a lot of consistency in what we do. Now let's go back and work on all the bits and pieces around that.
All right. Gareth, do you have any enlightenment on top of that?
This is an interesting format, Brian. Let's just call it that. So clarify for me the question again, Brian, would you please?
Yeah, Jamie didn't really answer it. So I see that the better players at my club have access to different technologies. I'm wondering how I can incorporate technology into training and becoming a better golfer.
So incorporating technology into training as well. Okay. What Jamie said is key. You know, TrackMan, €20,000. Not many people are going to have access to that level of technology. Maybe not consistently. Are they prepared to maybe buy a package whereby they'll have a lesson follow-ups on a regular basis? So they get the technological feedback. Something that players need to realize: diagnosis doesn't make you a better golfer, right? These are diagnostic systems. They don't make you better. They can help coaches in terms of where we look and maybe see things a little bit quicker. But that in and of itself, we still have to make decisions as to what we address thereafter. So I would say that there's definitely been a huge shift in golf coaching over the last 10 years, whereby if coaches don't have technology in their locker, sometimes they're perceived perhaps incorrectly as not being up to date or not being of value to certain players. And it maybe sometimes you just have to give people what they want, put them on the system, and then slip in what they need thereafter in terms of the coaching program.
Gotcha. How about yourself, Mark Sweeney?
Well, just for the record, if I answer it better than Jamie, I don't want him getting any extra points for this, okay?
No problem.
All right. Yeah. I mean,
you're confident.
Well, I've had three people to listen to it now.
No, can't you say one thing? I'm not sure that Gareth answered the question either, FYI.
He started to, and then he veered.
What question?
Can you clarify, please? No, I think technology, I don't use much technology. I do use it occasionally, but I think technology serves a couple purposes. One is if it shows the coach something they can't otherwise see. I know that Gareth said that, but you know, it's kind of like an x-ray machine. If you can x-ray and find out if you got a broken bone or not, that's helpful. But sometimes you can look at a guy's arm and be like, dude, your arm's broken. You know what I mean? So, you know, putting is fairly simplistic. So I find that rarely does technology show me something that I'm not already seeing or sensing. It can show some interesting things, but I use it fairly sparingly because I don't like students or me to get too hung up in the numbers and in the analysis. And I find it can be very distracting sometimes. If you're trying to teach lessons all the time with a sensor, it can be very distracting, I find. So there can be some value there if it sheds light on it. There's definitely some value if it shows, you know, if the student thinks they're terrible at something and the technology says, no, actually you're not. There actually can be some value to getting their mind off of the wrong subjects, you know, or a player says, I need to be doing this. I need to be doing this. And you put them on TrackMan or Sam or something. And the sensor goes, no, that's actually fine. You're looking down the wrong path. I think there's some value to that. But I don't see that happen a whole lot, frankly. So I use it fairly sparingly. If a player insists on it and it's something I don't have, I just send them somewhere else, to be honest.
All right. And Jamie, I'll be polite. I'll come back to you one more time. Anything you want to add to this?
I think Mark obviously had the questions given to him before we did this.
I didn't. I just woke up.
All right. So I'm going to give my point totals out here. I'm going to get Jamie Donaldson. I'm going to give you 550 points. I thought it was okay. You started really strong, and then you petered into some tees or something. I'm not sure what was happening there. Gareth McShay came out the gate. I'm going to have to go 500, but then I'm going to subtract 100 just because he's just Gareth. And then Mark Sweeney, that was a home run, man. You totally get 500 points, America.
Oh.
I got less than Jamie? What the heck?
Yeah.
Well, you can only get up to 500 points.
Okay.
Gotcha. Did I just hear America at the end of Mark's points being awarded?
No, I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah.
I think Payne's been watching how Donald Trump does business.
Making golf great again. All right. So, Gareth, give me a number here between 1 and 6, and you can't use 4.
6.
6. Very nice. All right. How can I make my training more efficient? I want to be the best player at my club. I have about 8 hours of training a week, and I play on the weekends. What would you suggest for me to set up to become a better training or a better training as a player?
Okay. I'm going to have to create a hypothetical player just in my mind here, Brian, to answer that question, but they've got 8 hours a week. They play at the weekend. So let's just discount the playing at the weekend. You got to eat your frogs first. So where is the single biggest area of opportunity? And then you go after that. And the majority of your training time should be spent on two things, the single biggest area of opportunity in terms of the leakage and low-hanging fruit. So if you've got a player who's very poor, say, chipping action, losing loads of shots around the greens, of course they need to technically address that, and there's manner in which they should. And then they could be three putting 6 times around on top of that. Well, those six putts are the low-hanging fruit that should be addressed in the other hours. Everything after that is maintenance. And I think the biggest mistake in terms of efficiency people make is they think for all 8 hours it should be robotic striking of golf balls. There should definitely be some freestyle in there where it's fun, it's enjoyable, they're taking on challenges. And if over those 8 hours they allocate 50% to freestyle or fun, 50% to addressing the key issues and the low-hanging fruit, they would see, I would say within 21 days, Brian, you could see a fundamental change in what's going on.
Nice. And I'd give you 1,000 points right now because somehow you integrated frog into this conversation. And you know what? I think right there, that's worth 1,000 points.
Ribbit.
Jamie, you have any follow-up on that?
Yes, I do. And I think I've got a way of getting some bonus points here. So first of all, you better have a good system to find out where their weaknesses lie and their strengths. So I think something along the lines of GameForge would be fantastic to start
1,000 points for Jamie right out of the gate. Keep going.
So we are understanding their performance metrics, but then I would go into structure of practice. So we're obviously prioritizing areas for development, but I'm going to throw in periodization as well, because obviously they're going to be playing fairly regularly in tournaments, and we'll want to be building up to the tournament, doing all the technical work as far away from the tournament as possible. And as we come into tournament phase, they're just working on scoring drills, short game, and just letting things happen. But here's my joker. Okay, I'm going to get them to keep a journal. I'm going to get them to diarize what's happening with their practice, how it feels. So I want to know what's happening when I'm not with them, because obviously that's a lot of time. I can see Gareth. This is what happens when you have 5 minutes to take notes and prepare your answer.
I'm coming for you.
and because when you're not with, they're obviously not with you for a long time. So you know, to work more effectively and smarter, if we can get them to journal their thoughts and their you know, even scoring their drills, I think we can be uber effective.
Very nice. And like I said, I gave you 1,000 bonus points, but I can't, because you can only earn 500. So I'm gonna take 500 of those away and just give you the 500 maximum.
Brian, I need to say something here.
We'll get back to you. Hold on, guys.
Wait, this is important. I created a golf from my mind, and Jamie starts talking about tournaments. This was an 80-year-old who just wants to play golf for fun. How does Jamie, why is he sending her to golf tournaments?
Is he your fate?
I think that's minus another 50 points for that. That's a good point.
All right, Mark Sweeney, you can go ahead and weigh on this and earn your 500 points.
Yeah, I mean, this is just training 101. This is, you know, it's like an asset allocation model in finance. You have limited time, and you've got 10 or more skills you've got to build, right? And how do you allocate that? You've got, yeah, no, but it is, you know.
It's not Scrabble, you know.
Well, Scrabble, what are you talking about?
You're using big words.
Asset or model?
periodization.
Hit the mute button.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, so you've got a limited amount of time. You've got multiple skills you've got to work on. And the question is, how do you allocate your time? So you only know the answer to that if you're tracking your metrics, if you know where your strengths and weaknesses are. And you can't spend 100% of it on weaknesses. Otherwise, you know, as Gareth said, your maintenance has to be there for whatever you're good at. But you've got to figure out how much time in those 8 hours are you spending on a weakness versus maintaining strengths. And it's different for every player. There's no fixed model for everybody. You know, everybody should be working on all the fundamentals with refocus on weaknesses. But you only know that if, as an individual player, you're keeping some sort of metrics and you can track that over time.
Very good. Very good. We'll go ahead and give you 500 points for that. Gareth, do you want to – I'll give you kind of the recap. You can go after Jamie, preferably. But go ahead and give us your recap.
Do I just try and say big words now, Brian?
Yeah, it might work. I don't know.
Supercalifragilistic. I think the guys have come in with some key points behind what I said in that, you know, how do we know where we're starting from? Well, you have to track. That's critical. So, and if you don't know where you're starting from, every bit of practice you do is just shooting darts in the dark. So you must track. You must go after the key areas of gain, but you must sustain what's there already. And you've got to do what's right for you. Okay. You shouldn't be benchmarking against other players. You got to go after, you know, what was my performance last week? What do I want it to be in 2 weeks time? How do I reverse engineer 2 weeks time back to current and build my steps forward?
Nice. I think that was very eloquent from all of you. So all of you earn maximum points. Jamie, you get extra points just for saying GameForge.
GameForge.
So, GameForge. Yep. Garrett,
50. Now, a word from our sponsor.
All right. Mark Sweeney, pick a number 1, 2, 3, or 5.
3. 3.
Ooh, that was a mistake.
I have butterflies.
This is coming from a high end player. I have been using the green books for the past 2 years. I like them a lot. However, when I apply the numbers from the book into the Aimpoint system, I noticed that I misread a bunch. What is not working?
Their training is not, their brain is not working. It depends on which Aimpoint system they're talking about. So, and I've run into this problem with a few players. No big surprise. If they're using the old aim charts and they're using the slopes off the books and understand angles and all that, then they can calculate a break relatively well. But the express method is different in that the books tell you the slope, the maximum slope directly down the hill. So if the book says it's a 3% slope, that's only in one direction that is 3%. And if you're using express and you're putting straight up the hill, it's not a 3% slope, it's a 0% slope. And if you've learned express, you understand that, but a lot of people confuse them. I've had very high end players come to me and say, well, I just use whatever number the book says and try to do an express read on that. And that's only going to work maybe 10% of the time, frankly. So there's a big misunderstanding in what the numbers in the books mean, how to apply them correctly. We actually did a video tutorial on this a couple of years ago, Brian, remember? Because there was such an issue out there that people think they have to take the book and use it, but they don't really get trained on it. And as simple as they seem, you really need training to understand what the numbers represent and how to interpret the numbers. I've never been a big fan of reading greens off the book. You know, I like the books as a roadmap and for approach shots and to give you a rough idea of what the slopes are around the green, but I do not like, never have liked using them to read your putt. And people who stand on the side and read their putt and get their break off the book only and then go up another putt, I think they're insane.
All right. Jamie Donaldson, where do you weigh in on that?
Right. Well, obviously, Mark answered it pretty well. But, you know, some of the green books are in degrees, and Aimpoint works in percentages. So there's a good chance that they're using a green map which doesn't fit the Aimpoint numerics. So, or metrics. So I've heard of that. I mean, what we'll do is I'll go from past experiences I've had with players that use the green book. Another problem is you don't know exactly where you are on the green. So you could be one step to the side of where the ball is, and that slope can change dramatically. So you know, you can't pinpoint your ball on the green, so you're not going to be accurate in that respect. Also, very slight angles. If you don't hold the chart in the right position, a one could look like you're coming from from zero. So you're going straight, like Mark talked about, going straight up the hill as opposed to crossing the slope. So you can make big mistakes in that respect. But also, some of the green maps aren't as specific as Aimpoint. Certainly not Aimpoint Express, where you're measuring exactly where the ball's going to roll across. And I have heard from people that produce some of these green maps that they take the average of like an 8-foot piece of the green. So they're not measuring, you know, with Aimpoint, you're measuring the slope, give or take 6 inches each side of where the ball will roll. So you've got this very small kind of foot and a half area, and you'll get the exact percentage where the ball is rolling across, whereas the people that create the books are taking, like I said, an 8-foot section, and they just do the average slope across it. So
that's pretty frightening.
Yeah. So they can be too general. Yeah, I think that's all my answers on that, really. Literally, you don't know where the ball is. The numbers aren't going to be accurate, and they could even be in the wrong metrics.
Awesome. Jamie finally woke up. He is back in the game here. 500 points for that. Gareth, what is your
game forge books?
Brian, the first thing I would say to that question is the listeners need to go back to the In the Hunt podcast, which was with the caddies. And I think this was more or less answered within that podcast. Matt Kuchar's caddy did a great job. Mark and yourself spoke to him extensively about how he utilizes green reading books and Aimpoint simultaneously. The only thing I would add to my esteemed friends is confusion just doesn't work. So possibly one or the other, but not both. And I'd just like to say In the Hunt now as well.
In the Hunt, you definitely get 500 points. That was well played. He referred to past show. Everything after that, I really didn't hear. So 500 points for Gareth for that. That was awesome. Mark, do you want to clean up any mistakes Jamie might have said or anything along that line?
No, Jamie actually did a good job there. I'm a little slow on the uptake sometimes. So now I get the game now. I just have to drop a brand in there and I get my full points. But anything stupid I might say.
So, all right, Mark Sweeney, you get 1,000 points for finally understanding the game.
Yeah, I get it now. Like I said, I get there eventually, but I'm usually last. Everything said was very accurate. You know, the green books have gotten better over time. The accuracy has gotten better. They used to be more of a problem in the past. It depends a little bit on who the vendor is. You know, there's a lot of different people who scan greens now, and there's very, very accurate ways to scan greens, and there's very kind of quick, loose, and low-resolution ways to scan the greens, and I've seen both. And as a player, you don't know which one you're getting. You know, I guess over time, the guys on tour learn which ones tend to have better accuracy. But, you know, as an amateur, if you go play some of these courses and buy one, you might have no idea. It might look accurate because it's in decimal points. Doesn't mean it's accurate. I mean, I've seen some underlying scans that were just garbage for courses before. But hopefully that's a thing of the past, or mostly a thing of the past now. But just be careful. You know, if you're going to use them, you got to learn how to use them from somebody who knows what they're doing.
All right, very good, very good. So round one is complete. We have a Donnybrook going on here. We got Mark Sweeney in the lead at 2,000. We have Gareth McShay coming in at 1,950. And then Jamie Donaldson has woken up and gotten up to 1,700 points. So
USA,
definitely in the strike zone here for Jamie Donaldson. And speaking of Jamie, let's go ahead and get you to pick your next topic. Number one, two, or five.
Well, let's shoot for the stars. Go number one.
Number one. All right. You're going to love this one, Jamie. If anybody would have asked for this question, it would have been you, and I'm glad you got it. I'm thinking about going to the pencil grip because I'm not making enough putts. I see players on TV putting that way. This must mean it's a better way to putt. What say you, Jamie Donaldson?
It all depends on what the pupil's tendencies are. Again, we don't know unless we know what's going on or going wrong. So I'm going to imagine the person's in front of me now, and I'm going to say to them, what is it that you do that makes you think that the pencil grip will give you a better chance of performance or to play to putt better? So maybe they'll tell me some fears they have with putting or some issues they've got, or this happens then, that happens then. And I guess it depends what their current grip is. If they were using like a left below right and now they're thinking about going back to the traditional format of right below left for right-hander, and they feel like the pencil hold with the right hand is going to actually give them a bit more stability. If they've got some path issues, then yeah. I mean, I'd say let's give it a go. Let's find out. With grips, I seldom look at a player's grip. I can't remember looking at someone and saying, he's got this grip, that's going to cause X, Y, Z. But I have seen things happen and said, right, now let's look at how he's holding the putter. Let's see how that influences the forearms, the chest, the shoulders. Let's see if his faults are caused by the hand placement. And who knows, that guy might solve a few problems by switching to the pencil grip. There's a lot of fashion, a lot of fads happening in golf. We know that. So players switching grips, couple win, everyone's trying out. And even the best players in the world are guilty of this. You can see crazies. And sometimes it's like a placebo. They can go out and they can putt fantastic for a couple of events. But I've said this in previous podcasts. For about 14 years, the make percentage average on tour hasn't changed. So with all the changes that are happening and the different types of ball, different types of putter, added technology, the average is still not getting better.
Nice. I like the way you tag technology back from your first question. That's bonus points right there, buddy. That was nice.
That's I'm waking up slowly as well.
I like that. All right. Yeah. Go ahead. And game four, is that what you said?
Well, there's no product placement in that answer. I'm confident that's pretty good.
All right, you get 600 points for no product placement, but it was well answered. I appreciate that. Gareth, how about yourself?
Sweetie got 1,000 for one.
Points don't really matter, man. You haven't figured this out yet. Gareth, go ahead.
Brian, thanks. I'd just like to say this answer was brought to you by Bud Light. So making change because of something you see somebody else doing is a really bad idea, in my opinion. You've got to go and have your own situation analyzed by an expert and sure, test it by all means. Give all the various putting grips a try if you so desire, but change because it's fashionable, a fad, or you see your favorite player doing something is a really bad idea. The pencil grip will not work on Irish greens that are stimp 7 during the wintertime. It's just not, going to work, and it's not for everybody, and therefore you've got to figure out along with your coach what is your best option and stick with it thereafter.
Nice.
Game four.
Yeah, that's 500 points right there, just because Mark Sweeney loves Bud Light. If I gave you anything less than that, I'd get a mean text as we're recording this. So Mark Sweeney, what are your thoughts on using the pencil grip, or what advice would you give?
Well,
100 points.
Where the boys are right is, you know, you shouldn't be changing something just to change it, you know, and I would ask a student, why do you think you need to change your grip? if there's clearly a problem, then, you know, yes, I have looked at different grips, and, you know, I see more problems with left-hand low grip than any other grip. And I have got some incremental improvement from tweaking people's grips for sure. But if somebody just comes and says, I want to throw everything out, I'm doing out and try something new, you know, my first question would be, well, why? What is it you're trying to solve? What's the problem you're having that the pencil grip's going to fix? And it, sometimes players are going to do what they're going to do. You know what I mean? And sometimes they do it. And if they insist on switching, then the next course is, okay, well, let's track if it's making a change in your putting statistics or not. Are you making more putts or fewer putts or the same? Ultimately, that's going to tell you whether it was a good decision or not. You know, and then to be honest, if it's an amateur golfer who's not playing competitively, whatever. Like if they really want to change the grip, change your grip. You know, if you putt worse, then we'll go back to what you're doing. You know, I found it's very hard to fight players if they get a bug about doing something. Sometimes you just got to let them go do it and see what happens. But I would challenge them on why first. If I didn't think it was a good idea, you know, I've had some players who wanted to go left-hand low, and I would challenge them on that because I do see a lot more issues with left-hand low consistently. There's issues you have to work around. And so I don't like the grip. I know some people putt very well with it, but generally it's one of my least favorite. But other than that, you know, I try to challenge them and then say, if you really want to try it, let's try it. Let's go hit 20 putts and let's see if it's actually helping or not.
Nice, nice. Jamie, any close this out?
No. No, I think both the boys echoed what I said in my answer, saying how good it was. And then they tried to add a little bit, which is, I guess that's the game. But I'm pretty happy that they echoed what I said.
Right. Wow.
Very good, very good. Jamie has definitely figured the game out. I enjoy this now. All right, Gareth, you have the choice number 2 or number 5?
2, please.
2. All right. I've been training really hard to become a better short game player. I read that block training is the way to go. I hit countless shots at the target from the same spot, and I do quite well. But when I go to play, it doesn't follow. What's wrong with me?
Nothing's wrong with you, Brian.
Okay. How about this player?
Okay, let's go. Okay, all right, let's go there.
1,000 points.
1,000 points.
Block training is not. It's just not good, folks. There are 3 stages to training. You encode, or you get exposed to new information. You have storage, whereby you start to learn it and assimilate it, and then you have retrieval, where you have, after a period of time, bring it back and utilize it again. If you stand hitting the same shot over and over and over, your brain switches off. You're an automatic pilot. You're not learning. Can I say this? You're like a trained monkey. Sorry, Jamie. And therefore,
500 points right there. You can stop.
You delete that. You delete that, right? but you're not learning. You're in artificial circumstances. And it was Earl Nightingale who said, "Look at what the majority are doing, and then do the opposite." If you are block training, you're standing beside all the other people who are block training. You're not actually learning anything at that point in time. You've got to go out, make it. If it's technical, for sure, spend a certain amount of time ingraining some technical changes. But then it's got to be different lies, different grass conditions, different speeds of greens, different everything you can consider that you are more likely to find in a game of golf. Golf is not played off flat surfaces with perfect lies, with zero challenges. It's got to replicate what you expect to encounter.
Nice, nice. How about yourself, Mark Sweeney? What are your thoughts on working on the same piece from the same spot all day?
Well, I don't do it. You know, I might do 5 to 10 minutes max in an hour lesson. I might do 10 minutes of block training just in the beginning, just to kind of check alignment or check some motion or something. But I try to minimize it, and I try to do it first and get it out of the way, and then move on to as much variety and as much performance testing and emotional testing and putting people under pressure and simulations. You know, I get much more value out of putting players under pressure test and testing them and figuring out how they respond in different scenarios than I do hitting the same 10-foot putt over and over and over again. You know, it's just, not to mention, just it's boring. You know, if you have anybody hit the same 10-foot putt, they're going to figure out how to make it pretty quickly and just replicate it. And as Gary said, that's not golf. You know, that's not the way golf works, and that's not the way you actually get better in a tournament. You might feel confident and feel comfortable at home, but you're going to go to a tournament and get your butt kicked.
Very good. Jamie Donaldson, what say you?
Well, I have a rule in my lessons, which is you never hit the same putt twice. Briefly, I'll relate it to teaching putting. If you give someone a putt and they miss it on the right-hand side, they tend to pretty much aim in the same manner they did before. But what they'll do is they'll manipulate enough so that the ball doesn't miss to the right. So whatever that looks like, closing the face, whatever. So all they're doing is learning how to do something that gives them a better result for the shot in front of them. So whether it be they start by aiming too far right and then just learn to pull it or drag it back towards the target. We're playing off the same lie every time, so they've got a perfect lie. And also, they're learning from the last shot. So now we'll look at it with chipping. They might hit it a bit long, hit it a bit short, hit it to the right, and then they find one that finishes nearer to the pin. Now, they've not learned how to hit a better shot. They've just learned to manipulate from the last shot, change what they did to get a good shot out there. And they've got a bag of balls there, so there's no pressure. They're not worried about hitting a bad shot because there's another 50 on the floor. And you'd almost imagine that they would hit all these shots, look at the pin and say, well, there's about 10 good shots in there. I must have improved a bit. But realistically, what kills them when they go out and play is the dreadful shots they hit. Now, when you're practicing and you've got more balls, you thin one across the green, you just drag another ball across and you hit it. It doesn't have the same pain that you get when you're playing golf when you thin one across the green. So I think they're missing out on the sort of the emotional feedback that you get from these shots.
Nice. So I think everyone answered that greatly. So I'm going to go ahead and get 500 points to Mark, 500 to Jamie. I'm going to give 1,000 to Gareth. But since Gareth keeps this menagerie of animals coming back, we've got monkeys, we've got frogs. He's going to actually take 50 points from each of the other guys, and he earns a bonus 100.
What the heck?
So just by bringing in the animals of a monkey and a frog, I never thought that would happen in the show, but boom, somehow we've got there. So now we're PETA. PETA actually will be sponsoring us. So let's go ahead.
Can I just say that Gareth is the Irish version of the Tiger King? So you're going to get a lot of these references.
Bleep Carl Baskin.
All right, Mark Sweeney, you get the last question. I am a junior golfer. I have just set my goal to play collegiately. I have 4 years until I'm eligible for college. What will it take for me to reach my goal?
Well, it depends what level of college player they are. Let's say top 20 D1 player. So let's shoot it high. You need to be, if you're a male college player, you need to be basically averaging in the high 60s. You need to be making, you know, four to five birdies and 2 to 3 bogeys around maximum if you want to be a top player. If you look down the golf, I don't know if it's Golf Stat or Golf Week rankings, but one of them, if you look at, you know, college men, you've got to get pretty far down the list before they're averaging even at 70. You know, there's 100 plus who are averaging, you know, high 60s or something like that. So they're shooting low scores, shooting very low scores. So you need to, in college, you need to be a good ball striker. You don't have to be a great putter. You have to be an okay putter. But if you hit the ball well, if you're hitting 12 to 14 greens, hitting 7 to 9 in positions around, you can be a very, very, very effective college player.
Nice, nice. How about you, Jamie? What would you say if you have a person coming up to you and says, I want to play collegiately, whether it's in Europe or going to the States, what advice could you give them?
Well, we have an awful lot of youngsters who I work with who set their target on the States. So the States is a very attractive destination. when you look at what's available in the UK, because you can have 11 months of good weather and we get about 5 or 6 months at best. And also when you watch the golf on television, a lot of the world's best players, especially the US guys, have come through US colleges. So it seems like a good funnel for performance. And I would say my experiences of the colleges are, some places are just about getting bums on seats. So they're just all about getting the desks filled and what have you. Whereas some other colleges are much more around finishing top three in Division One, and they're more centric around tournament golf. So I've been very lucky to meet an awful lot of college coaches over the last sort of 10 years. So having people that I know that work at some very high ranking colleges is really useful, because they can help the parents of these kids that are trying to find placement, help them understand where's going to be the best place for them and what to expect. You know, I coach some kids who are at college who don't really get coached. I coach some kids that are US colleges where they use Coach Now, and you know, my phone will be buzzing several times a day with lots of videos being uploaded, and there's notes going in there, and the coaches are talking. So I think my advice, apart from how good you have to be, would be make sure you know exactly how your college functions, and is it the right fit for you? You know, and America is quite diverse as well. I mean, people have gone and had to move colleges because they just didn't like the areas, didn't know what to expect. So I think there's, you know, if you go to England, you go to England. If you go to America, you've got probably quite a few different climates to deal with. So I think geographically understanding the seasons there will be good too.
Nice. Jamie, that's probably the best you've commented so far. I'm giving you 500 points for making a really good case, and I'm going to give you an extra 400 points for basically saying America's better. So Gareth, what do you think?
He's definitely figured this game out.
Should have been a politician.
Is that Bojo? Who is that? No, it's Jamie Donaldson.
Bojo.
Right, Gareth.
Two things I will add. If you're going to college in St. Andrews, Scotland, and you want to become the top player, you're going to need a different way of playing the game than if you're going to America and playing the ball through the air. So, how do I become the top player will be relevant to the environment you expect to be operating in 4 years' time. That's the first thing I would say. And a second thing, which is just great advice in life, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. Find the player that's one above you, grab onto their shirt tails, and make them one below you, and just keep going. Okay? Don't look at the top player, because the top player is probably too far ahead of you if they're 4 years deep and you're in your first year. But if you can keep finding that player that's one or two above you, you will figure it out, because you can. It's within striking distance. Anything beyond that will overwhelm and you'll probably become demotivated.
Nice, nice. That was great. Mark, you want to close this out?
Yeah, I don't think he gets any more bonus points because he said a third animal on there. Just saying. I think he's maxed out on his animal points.
I think I'm going to have to deduct points. I think he went a little too far. He went with the largest animal of them all, but we'll see. I'll have to think on that one.
I mean, what they all hit on was that, you know, there are so many colleges and so many places in the States and so many team cultures that, you know, there's not one answer that fits that. If you want to be a top 20 player, yes, it's a little more clear, but there's lots of ways to play college golf in the States. Lots and lots of ways. And it's really a matter of kind of what scores are, do you want to be, where do you want to go? And then back into what your scores need to be to get there. If you want to be on a traveling team, I mean, if you're shooting high 70s and want to play, you know, a top D1 school, you're not going to be traveling. You know, but there's lots of places you can play college with that also.
Nice. As I did my note-taking as Mark finished that out, this was an amazing comeback by Jamie Donaldson. In the second round, he scored 2,200 points to come screaming back to 3,900. Mark Sweeney comes in right at 3,900 as well.
And Gary Trichet
getting kind of a points deducted from the elephant comment. I'm sorry, it was just too much. He's at 3,900 as well, so we have a three-way tie. What are we going to do?
Brian, what can I tell you? The world's largest animal is the blue whale, not the elephant. So you should deduct yourself from a judiciary position.
I'm deducted. I'm having to host you fools. So now I'm just going to go ahead and we're going to solve this professionally. I'm going to write down a number between 1 and 10. Each of you guess it, and the one closest wins. Go ahead, Jamie Donaldson.
Well, I've read your mind, so it's cheating.
All right.
But it's 7.
It is 7.
You took my number, Jamie.
It is 7.
Brian, can I guess?
Jamie Donaldson
is literally
the grand
my number.
It's the only number I know.
Wow.
So Jamie,
all right, Jamie, you're hosting next week.
So Jamie Donaldson will host.
Well done.
Yeah. Out of interest, what number did Gareth have? Ferret.
I would probably have gone with 3, I'm going to say. But I don't know. It's like it's.
Well, it's wrong, I'm afraid.
It's right for me, Jamie.
All right, boys. So the next time we play, what would you do? Jamie Donaldson will be hosting, and if you, as listeners, have any questions or scenarios, you can send it to us at contact, and I'll forward those to Jamie because Jamie doesn't like to prepare. So if you can provide him any help by giving him the questions, he would greatly appreciate that.
As we
wrap up today's show, I'm just going to go through some logistics. I did some analytics and saw who's listening to us the most and where. Inside the states, Florida has about 15% of our viewing population. Virginia is about 14. So come on, Virginia. Really, Florida man's beating us.
Yeah.
North Carolina is right behind at 13, and then we have New York, Texas, and so on. And then we also have England here. Rotherham is number 1 with more than a quarter of the downloads. Bromborough, Ilford, and Amersham are the highest downloading areas there.
Are those actually Ireland, cities in England?
I'm not aware of many of those, but I'm nodding.
I don't know. That's just what the analytics tell me. And then Leinster in Ireland is 89%. So I think that's where Gareth lives, and he just downloads every day.
That's actually a county. It's like a section of Ireland is Leinster.
It's a province. Oh, yeah.
Very good.
It's a province.
Yeah, it's a province.
I have multiple devices that I just keep downloading.
I do the same now. but again, thank you for all those that are listening. Again, we're averaging. It's kind of crazy how many people actually listen to these idiots talk. But again, we appreciate it. We work really hard. So, boys, any closing thoughts before I shut down this episode?
No, but Jamie, you're going to have to change the rules next time because we've all figured them out.
Clearly, there are no rules.
There will be no rules with Jamie, I promise you.
I told you the points don't matter. It's like, whose line it is anyways?
I'd just like to make one point. Technically, America didn't win today.
Yeah, we did.
Jamie won.
Yeah.
I was going to guess 7-2, so we should have actually gone into a second round.
Well, Mark, it's a
we had 7,800 points between us. You only had 3,900.
Go on, Europe.
Yes. Go, Europe. And like I said, what we'll do is we'll run a tally on who wins, and we'll call these Ryder Cup points. So we'll actually play this game and see who at the end, what Ryder Cup team wins and how that actually compares to the actual final in September. And I imagine this is about as scientifically as a lot of prognosticators actually do to actually guess. So I think we got a really good shot with this.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So thank everybody again for listening to this episode. We appreciate it. Keep pouring in thoughts, comments. Like I said, if you have questions that want to be in part of this, maybe a question that would help your game, we can enlighten, send that to us as well. Jamie Donaldson would really appreciate it. Thank you again and have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.